Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. We're more than aware of the situation in Eastern Europe and Ukraine, with Russia having just invaded by sea, air and land. But what do we really know about Ukraine and why Russia seems so keen to take over their country? What will be the response of the rest of the world? Well, we've learned some things today, of course. But will it be left to sanctions, or will we be drawn into a much larger conflict? To find out more, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Lily Habaryadzu, who's the senior lecturer in criminology with security studies at Birmingham City University and joins me now. Good evening, Lily.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for joining me. For anybody who is unfamiliar with Ukraine, whereabouts in Europe is Ukraine?
Ukraine is a fairly large country in Eastern Europe, and it has borders with Russia, with Belarus, Poland, Romania. So that's where it's situated.
Is Ukraine a good neighbour to the Eastern Bloc countries? And is it a good neighbour to Russia? Or has there always, is there any synergy between them? Or has there always been a bit of tension?
Well, the Ukraine was obviously a good neighbour when it was part of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. They were all, Eastern Bloc, all these countries I mentioned. After the end of communism, after 1989, these republics gained independence, and countries like Poland that were under Soviet influence were now independent states. And so their alliances began to change. Mm-hmm. So they were no longer looking to the east, but started looking more to the West and becoming more westernized and joining Western alliances. And as such, they became bad neighbors of Russia.
Right. But is that the key thing that started the conflict between Russia and Ukraine? Or can we identify if it's a number of other things? And why do you think Russia has moved so aggressively towards Ukraine?
So, yes, I think we can trace the roots of the current conflict to 2014. Now, that's an important year for the Ukraine. At the time, the Ukraine had a pro-Russian president. In fact, about a third of Ukraine is pro-Russia. They speak Russian, and they identify more with Russia than Ukraine. So in 2014, there was a pro-Russian president who failed to sign an association agreement with the EU that the Ukrainians actually wanted. And we know there was a crisis then. The president resigned and a new president came on. And in the same year, the Ukraine signed that association agreement with the European Union, which was more economic cooperation, political cooperation, free trade. So that immediately became a threat for Russia, movement to the West. And Ukraine made it very clear that it wanted to join NATO as well. Now, it hasn't joined NATO yet.
No.
But in 2020, they did become part of an enhanced opportunity interoperability program. So they became a partner to NATO.
And I guess that's part of the reason why they've become so divided, as you said. Initially they identified being more with Russia than Ukraine. But, of course, all this has gone on. And as you say, I guess Russia sees it as a threat and probably is, disappointed, saddened, whatever other, word you want to use, really.
Well, it is a threat because NATO is moving more and more to the east. All these countries that used to be part of the Eastern Bloc are now NATO members.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ukraine could be next. Now, of course, after what's happened, it is very unlikely that the Ukraine will join NATO. And I think this is what the Russians actually want.
Mm-hmm. But why do you think Ukraine has taken so long in joining NATO and clearly not done that yet?
Well, NATO would not so happily accept the Ukraine because just the position of the Ukraine, it lies on a fault line, metaphorically speaking, a fault line. It's an area of weakness and vulnerability because of its position, being positioned so close to Russia and having such pro-Russian population. It's a significant number of people that are pro-Russian.
Mm.
And so NATO would hesitate to bring such a country in, unless it had it, you know, full stability and control. And Ukraine hasn't quite had that since 2014.
Now, the United States seems to have been actively engaged in this crisis, but why would they want to be involved with fighting? Because Boris Johnson has said today that we will not be sending troops and we're relying on our sanctions. But I don't understand why the US has suddenly become very proactive.
Well, the United States haven't said that they will actually send soldiers. They have said that through NATO, they will provide assistance to the Ukraine, mm-hmm. to the government of the Ukraine, to the army of the Ukraine. And they have been doing that. And this is as far as they will go for the moment. Now, if the war was to escalate, and hopefully it won't escalate, there may be some other help, but I don't think they will risk the lives of their soldiers.
No, but again, as you say, we don't know whether this will escalate, and if so, to what magnitude. But in your expert opinion, if it did escalate, how widespread could it get? I know that's like saying how long is a piece of string.
If it escalated... If it escalated, it would mean involving neighbour countries that are members of NATO.
Yeah.
And then NATO would have to protect those countries, and that would be an escalation.
Sure. Now, we've talked about NATO. Tell me about their role.
So, the role of NATO since 1949, when it was put together, was to defend its members from the communist threat, what was then the communist threat, the Soviet Union mm-hmm. and Eastern Europe. And that hasn't really changed much since then. It still has roughly the same role, but because it's expanded to the east, now all these countries that it was supposed to protect members from have become members.
Right.
So it's grown.
Yeah.
And inched its way towards Russia. So now its role is still the same, to protect its members from threats, and Russia is a big threat.
Sure. Now, I mean, this is a bit sort of pie in the sky, really, but what do you think a Russian victory over Ukraine would look like?
A Russian victory over Ukraine, at the very least, would involve setting up a Russian-friendly government.
Right.
This is how great powers tend to operate. You know, they will take over a country and make sure the next government that country has is an ally. And so that stops that country then from becoming forming alliances with their enemies or rivals, making deals only with them, serving their interests, having their military bases. Mm-hmm. This is how great powers operate. And I think Russia, at the very least, will expect that from Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to tell how that will map out. But, I mean, you've seen very clearly on the television that, you know, quite understandably, the Ukraine people, you know, are anti-war, and I quite understand why they are, because I don't think, from what I've seen in the wider media, I don't think they want any of that, do they?
They absolutely won't. Obviously, there are the separatists. You know, there are some who do want that, precisely that. But the vast majority of civilians living in any country, actually, they don't want war.
No.
You know, already civilians have been killed yesterday
yes.
and today. And that will only continue as long as the conflict continues. And of course they don't want that.
Russia seems a terribly powerful nation compared with, you know, its neighbours. But what would be the costs to Russia, both economically and politically, to engage in an invasion like this?
There's already been a cost in that, you know, there are very heavy sanctions and there will be a loss. And I think when Putin decided to invade, he had to calculate, you know, what he would gain and what he would lose.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he calculated that his gains would be greater than his losses.
Sure.
And Russia's losses. But that remains to be seen. It may be that Russia thinks it can do business with countries in the East.
Yes, sure.
And dispense with the West.
I mean, I've just had an email from Mina in Hale-Zoen. Hello, Mina. Thank you for getting in touch. Mina says, does the doctor think there would be a credible threat to the West? It seems that we're sanctioning with a handful of simplistic measures, but could it get worse? What do you think about that?
Yes, it could get worse. Hopefully it won't, but it could get worse, and that would depend on how far Putin is willing to go and how far NATO is willing to go. Mm-hmm. And if it did get worse, remember, these are countries that have nuclear weapons, and that could affect the entire world.
Yeah, I mean, it would turn it into a world war, wouldn't it, which is terribly scary for everybody. But why didn't the previous rounds of Russian sanctions deter Putin in the first place?
Well, the previous sanctions were not as serious as these, because still Europe wanted to, and the West wanted to, somehow maintain a good relationship, good enough, so that we can get, you know, our gas and our oil and whatever Russia had to offer. And I think this was a good idea, because primarily countries care about their interests.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as long as some important interests are served, we try to maintain stability.
People seem concerned in this country, and I quite understand it, about the costs. I mean, we've got the rising cost of energy anyway, which is unrelated to this, and also the price increase in fuel as well. I noticed that at the pumps when I went and got some fuel earlier on. But, you know, what do you think this will do to our economy?
Well, yes, there would be rising prices. It would affect some aspects of the economy, I suppose. But in comparison to what it's doing to the Ukraine, of course we care about interests, but at least our lives aren't being threatened, and that's a really big thing. We in the UK, in all the wars that the UK has fought, either on its own or with an ally or through NATO, we have been safe.
Yes.
And that is a big thing. That is very important. The British civilians have not been under threat in that way, and any physical threat.
And David from Kinver has just emailed. David, thanks for getting in touch. He says, do Russian people want this? He says, Putin is clearly a dictator, but what David has seen on social media is a lot of Russian citizens who are very much against his ideals. He says, could we just not remove Putin from power, and would that make Russia a country we could get on with? Well, I suppose that's easier said than done.
It is, and I would have thought that most Russian people would not want a war. I mean, think when the UK went to war in Iraq. Think how many people in this country didn't want the war.
Mm.
It happened anyway. The leaders decide these things. A different leader may have decided differently. Yes, I think the leader can play a role. However, there are what we call national interests and reaction and responses to threats that leaders tend to agree on.
Yes. I mean, a Russian-Ukrainian conflict, as we've already said, you know, could be catastrophic to the world, really, couldn't it?
Potentially it could be. Who knows? What if Russia decides to use nuclear weapons?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is frightening to me.
And
I don't know, you didn't mention, perhaps you don't know this, I'm not only a lecturer, I am the principal researcher of an NGO called Iraq Body Count. And that means that on a daily basis, I monitor security in Iraq and I count civilian deaths. And I see what war can do to the civilian population. And it can start from, say, an invasion that you think will be over in a few weeks. And then after that, you know, there'll be peace and some kind of stability will be restored. And it doesn't happen that way. All sorts of militia arise, insurgencies, and now Iraq has had civilians killed from so many different parties. And this is what frightens me in modern-day conflicts. It doesn't stay between two sides.
No. If you were, I don't know, if you were our prime minister, or you were the leader of NATO, or you were in a position where you had a lot of power at your fingertips, what would be your early intervention with this, if you had the power to be involved?
You mean now?
Hmm.
If I were Boris Johnson, probably I would be doing what he's doing. So, you know, saying economic sanctions, we're not sending any troops. At this point, I would be hesitant to get more involved, simply because I wouldn't want to put my own people in more danger.
No. No.
Because any leader has a responsibility to their people.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's one of those things, you know, that people are, you know, they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. But I think you're right in the sense that, you know, we have to err on the side of caution. And, you know, the people that are involved have to take this, I suppose, a day at a time, really, because, you know, you don't need a sledgehammer to crack a nut, do you?
No, and mistakes were made in the past. We saw Tony Blair going into Iraq. You know, that was a mistake.
Yes, it was.
He shouldn't have done that. If he'd achieved anything for the UK, it was to bring terrorism here. Maybe some lessons have been learned about not being too keen to go to war.
Mm. Now, would an invasion cut off gas supplies to that we get from Europe? And would that be all we're really interested in? Because we do get a lot of our energy from, well, certainly our gas from Europe. So would that have an impact on us?
Which they get from Russia. Yes, 40%, in fact, comes from Russia. And that will have an effect, yes. Of course it will have an effect. Is that all we care about? No, I don't think that's all we care about, although, of course, we care about that. I think there are other things we care about, both as UK and as being part of a Western alliance.
Mm-hmm.
We want to appear to be and really be powerful.
Mm-hmm.
We want to maintain our power, increase it if possible, maintain our security. And, of course, on the other side, they want the same thing. So it's important for both of them to be seen to be powerful. To justify the vast amount of money that are spent towards defense, towards military campaigns, war efforts. We're talking vast amounts of money. And there has to be a justification for that. There still needs to be a role for NATO. There still needs to be a role for the military to play, even if it's just training others to help with their own defence.
Yeah, and I think that's key, isn't it, really, to actually train people to be more independent. In our studios, we have large televisions which always have the BBC News channel on, and I'm watching the news now, and I can see that so many people, quite understandably, are fleeing Ukraine, and I think if I lived there, I would be doing the same as well. But where are these people going to go to? And, you know, it would be nice to think that the neighbouring countries will be able to offer them some support and, you know, some safety, really.
Yes, of course. Whenever there is a war, there are sometimes millions of refugees. And so far, a lot of them have come from the Middle East. But now is a new area and a new hot area where refugees are being created. So I suppose the neighbouring countries, which used to be part of the Eastern Bloc, would at least temporarily welcome the refugees. But the life of a refugee, you know, is not enviable. Even if they find shelter and some sort of care, being a refugee is tough. And they would be wanting to go home.
Understandably. I mean, you see them on the television and you see photographs in the newspaper and you can't even begin to imagine what's going through their minds. And, you know, their lives are completely decimated by this and they're fleeing, as we see, you know, their homes, their businesses and such like. And you just think, you know, what kind of future are they going to have?
Yes, I'm sure they're thinking of their future, their lives that have been disrupted. I mean, these were people that until yesterday had jobs. Their children were going to the local schools. You know, they had their friendships. And everything has now been taken away because they had to leave the country. And how are they going to survive? What will happen to their children? I know from my research on Iraq, there are Iraqi children that never went to school. Never. Mm-hmm. They grew up in refugee camps.
Yeah.
You know, what are their prospects?
Well,
they're zero.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are very, very fortunate in our country, despite its trials and tribulations, because these people don't have, you know, the luxuries these are our normal sort of, you know, staple things that we do here, but they don't have that there. So, you know, we are very fortunate to have, you know, a strong education system here. I think this matter has been bubbling for quite some time, I think secretly, particularly when Russia were trialing nuclear weapons a while back. I think I saw something in the news about that. But I must admit, I'm surprised that Russia invaded Ukraine. Are you?
I am surprised. I really was not expecting this. I was expecting the soft war that came with it from both sides, But I really didn't think they would invade now. And the reason I didn't think this, and it was not because I thought Russia was peace-loving, you know, a great power, this is how it survived, by expanding. Mm-hmm. And it has done this. But it's because of NATO's, in a way, confrontation. You know, NATO made it very clear that they would intervene in some way. So Russia would have a lot to lose. Even if it emerged the winner, it will have lost a lot.
Yes.
In the meantime. So there was a strong opponent backing up the Ukraine. And that's why that surprised me. It seemed to be quite reckless, actually.
What's your view on Putin? What do you think of him?
Putin is typical ruthless great power leader. I think a lot of these great power leaders have, on top of, you know, the role they have as leading great powers that constantly need to be increasing their power, they probably have some particular personality, and it's part of an ego thing for them as well as the national interest. Mm.
And I suppose,
and we see that in American presidents, for example, and same as Soviet leaders in the past.
And because he's all-powerful, or he thinks he's all-powerful, as you've just said, in his mind and in his eyes, he probably thinks, well, you know, I can't be seen to back down, I can't be seen to fail, and therefore, as you say, you know, he will just, you know, he'll be very narrow-minded, very focused, and very tenacious.
He would be, and just think, even in smaller, weaker countries like Iraq, you remember Saddam Hussein?
Mm.
He could have stepped down. You remember years of economic sanctions and threats of war, and he wouldn't step down.
No.
He wouldn't, because power, for certain people, especially once they become leaders, power becomes the beginning and the end, and they won't give it up, even if it costs the lives of their people.
Sure. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on things, and hopefully things will die down eventually and calm down. But we live in hope, and we just have to pray, I think. Dr. Lily Hamutyadze, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive.
That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.